I'd like to call the regular business meeting for Wednesday, August 14th to order. Councilmember Scales, Councilmember Hightopoulos, Councilmember Blossom, Blair, Councilmember Ward, and Councilmember Lester are present. Let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I noticed that there is one change to the packet. On the first item, the language on Section 4 has been modified by the attorney in terms of its effectiveness. Are there any other modifications or additions to the agenda?
Mr. Chairman.
Councilmember Ward.
I move that we approve the agenda as modified.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Is there any conflict of interest to disclose at this time? Seeing none, we'll start with the general public comment.
Councilmember Hightopoulos?
I'm sorry, Councilmember Hightopoulos?
Just a heads up, I wanted to add a little item to the agenda. I'll bring it up during good of the order and let council decide whether they want to entertain it or not. But I missed the
next. Do you want to, would you like to go back?
Yeah, we can procedurally. I thought once we'd approve the agenda, we're okay. So can I make a new motion to approve?
Dave, do you withdraw your motion? And I'll withdraw the second.
Fine.
Okay.
Okay, well, I would move to add an item where I'd like to address signing a letter as a council person. That's why I want to bring it here, regarding comments to PSC on their 20-year projected use of coal. There's letters have gone in from other jurisdictions, from King County, the mayors of a number of cities in King County, not Seattle because they don't use PSC, but it would be comments to PSC, and I would want to present it and see if council would accept the language and whether I could sign it or not.
Okay, so we add that under new business?
Thank you.
Okay. Letter.
So why don't we approve it as modified?
Do I now have another agenda? Motion.
I move that we approve it as modified both times.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Now we'll take public comment.
Roz, are there any...
I'm sorry. Houston, okay, this is on the water rates. General public comments. There are no public comments. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is item number 4, second reading of ordinance number 2013-22. And since it's an ordinance, we've opened up the public comment, and we have one, and that is Houston Wade.
Hi there, Houston Wade, 330 Shepherd Way. I just want to be on the record saying that I'm not for the current rate cuts for the water. I believe that the council and the public utility should look at what upgrades and maintenance needs to be done to the current system through a general water plan before any cuts are made, simply because upgrading our ductile iron and cast iron pipes can cost several hundred thousand dollars a mile. And we have a lot that have not been upgraded in a long time. The work on Winslow Way last year when they tore it up and had to put in new pipes and everything. That was millions of dollars. And what we see as a reserve fund now is basically in place as a result of not spending that money over the last decade or so. And to be fiscally responsible, I think we need to not cut the current water rates when it's really not that big of our water sewer bill, and focus instead on seeing what we can do to improve and maintain our system, because you know we have $15 million of infrastructure, and I don't want to see that further neglected because we lost our reserve fund due to giving it back to the customers. That's just my piece. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Are there any other comments? This closes then the public comment period.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Councilmember Ward.
I move the City Council approve ordinance number 2013-22 relating to the city's water utility and reducing monthly water service rates by 30%.
Second.
Discussion. Councilmember Hytopoulos.
I'll try to be brief, since I know we've had the same conversation as a council a number of meetings in the last few months, but I feel it's my duty to put on the record at the time of the vote what my concerns are. I continue to be concerned that this reduction is premature, that the responsible thing to do would be, because this is not, we're not in an urgent situation, would be to complete the water plan, to do a rate study, to do this thoughtfully. I think it's important for the record that our customers are paying, our ratepayers are paying at most median rates for the region, will now be paying very, very low rates for the region. I think that this is premature, and there is no urgent need for this, as I've stated in much more detail previously. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Blair.
Thank you. Well, I concur with the comments that Kirsten made, and I also just want to say that this particular ordinance does not address or in any way include comments about giving money back, as was noted. So this is really just a reduction in rates. That next issue that was brought up during the comments will be addressed at a later time. All right, having said that, I do echo many of Kirsten's concerns, and she's expressed them before. I also am going to vote in favor of this for the reason that I stated last time, and that is that as a council, the majority vote, therefore the council vote, was to go forward with this, and this is approving the ordinance, which simply implements our prior vote.
Councilmember Scales.
So when the city reduced rates last time, I believe it was in 2011, by 45%, we were in a very different situation. At that time, it was widely acknowledged that our rates were higher than the norm and needed to be reduced to be comparable with other utilities such as KPUD. There was a major restructuring of the water utility to reduce costs. And we did a very thorough and lengthy analysis of the impacts of the rate change. And there was a lot of debate, especially about the amount of the rate reduction. And that was a very successful process and clearly a necessary process. And what we've had here is a very abbreviated process and because it's abbreviated, because there hasn't been much analysis, and because we're jumping the gun in terms of making these major decisions before we have a water plan, we don't know what the long-term impacts are going to be. We know from the staff analysis that in the short term, we're fine. We're going to be fine for the next year. That's clear. What we don't know and what nobody can say is what are the long-term impacts of this rate reduction and what will it do in the long term to the rate utility or to the water utility. Clearly, it reduces our options in the future for what we would like to do with the utility in terms of restructuring rates. It makes the utility more vulnerable by reducing the reserves and being less available to respond to emergencies. And you know, as I've said many times before, there is no urgency to make such a major change. I'm not opposed philosophically to a rate reduction or rate increase or keeping the rates the same. I just don't think that we're in a position and we shouldn't be making such a major decision with such a lack of information and lack of demonstrated need for the change.
Other comments? Councilmember Lester.
I will be supporting this motion as at the end of 2012, there was $566,000 additional money added to our reserves. Our reserves are nearly $6 million at this point. And we had a thorough conversation with the finance director and city manager, and we were told that this would be able to be supported for several years. It's not our intention to have this be supported for several years. We are looking at our further rate study will be coming forward, as well as finishing our water plan. So I'm very comfortable and confident that we can support this at this time, and I look forward to the UAC finishing the beginning and finishing the rate study, because there are other opportunities for adjusting our rates. As well, we have moved forward with paying for a water plan.
Councilmember Ward.
I'll also be supporting this motion. I think there's a very compelling argument for operating the system at the break-even point. It's very respectful of the ratepayers. It doesn't impact our reserves in any way, and we'll move forward on both the rate study and the water plan as quickly as possible. So this is a good business decision.
Additional comments? Councilmember Hytopoulos.
Just a couple of follow-up comments. I didn't recall that the city manager had said that we had several years, if that's correct. I'm sorry that I misremembered that. I thought it was more like one was easy, two, three. I wasn't clear that...
The finance director is here if you wish to ask her.
Okay. I'm happy to ask this as I'm done with my comment.
Okay.
Furthermore, I want to reiterate what I said last time, which only occurred to me the last time we talked about this, which is that you are putting the council in a position of raising rates in the future, and I think that is a big mistake for a lot of reasons. So the future council, presumably made up of some of these council members, or possibly made up with these council members, will be raising rates and haven't explained why. And finally, I just want to—I have to beg to differ with Ann with regards to the philosophical or the procedural concept that when a majority of the council moves an item forward for a vote on the ordinance, that it is incumbent upon the council members to all vote for it to support the council. I can think of all sorts of votes that universally people could imagine disagreeing with, a budget that was completely irresponsible, all sorts of decisions that a council member should vote their conscience all the way through to the end. So. Thank you.
I'd like to make a comment, and that is with respect to raising the rates in the future, and this may fall under this the next council or subsequent councils, I believe that we are going to be changing the rates in the future. I think that there is that's the whole reason of having a rate study. And having a water plan so that we can finally put the two together at the same time. There was a recommendation back in 2011 when the motion was made to reduce the rates by 45% to do a rate study. Discussion occurred at that time as well as that the reserve fund appeared large, and that the council should consider looking at a refund, and that was discussed and pushed off in the future, and we are continuing to do that because we have not done the water plan to really focus on what our long-term needs are. So this council is going forward to do that water plan so we can understand what our long-term needs are for the water system that the city manages, as well as a rate study to look at the rates that we have. Are they equitable for all of the different classes of customers? So I will be supporting this. Additional comments? We would you like, I'd like you to repeat the motion, please.
Yes, I move the City Council approve Ordinance 2013-22 relating to the city's water utility and reducing monthly water service rates by 30%.
I'd like to point out that that's the that's the one that is modified.
Yeah, item, that's Section 4 in that motion is modified.
Okay. I think it might be helpful because if just as a clarification, just in
happy
the
to
community
do so.
To hear it.
Go ahead.
Section 4 is that this ordinance shall take effect and be in force 5 days from and after its passage, approval, and publication as required by law, provided that the rates approved by this ordinance shall apply to all water furnished by the city on or after August 16th, 2013.
Okay. All those in favor of the ordinance signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Motion carries 5-2. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is Resolution 2013-13 pertaining to management of the city's utilities.
Mr. Chairman.
Councilmember Ward.
I move the City Council approve Resolution Number 2013-13 pertaining to the management of the city's utilities.
Second.
Discussion. Councilmember Scales.
We had a discussion about this resolution at the last meeting, and some language was changed in the resolution after discussion with the city attorney. And while, you know, I believe that the current language in the resolution does fit the standards set out by current case law, as I said last time, I don't think this resolution is necessary. It doesn't do anything except essentially restates what we're currently required to follow under law. So for that reason, I think I don't know exactly why it's necessary, but I don't think it is, so I'm going to vote against it.
Other comments? Councilmember Hytopoulos.
Just a moment. So to try to briefly summarize what I have said in the past, I also believe that in this particular case, restating the obvious law, it has no meaning other than, in my opinion, to suggest that the city has not followed the law, and I am not comfortable with that position. I don't believe that the city has not followed the law. This has been a subject of an ongoing litigation for years. I think it's inappropriate for the city to take a position that appears to suggest that we need to be reminded of what the law is. We have no intention of passing resolutions to remind us of the many, many other laws that we operate under all the time, so I will also not support it.
Councilmember Ward.
I'll be supporting this motion, particularly since I made it, but I think it's very important, even though something may be the law, to remind the community and the council of what our obligations are under those laws. I think it has meaning and most definitely is worth supporting.
Councilmember Lester.
I will be supporting this because in the last meeting of December 7th, 2011, we had the the chair of the UAC mention that he did that there needed to be clarity in terms of whether we were operating the utilities for the benefit of the city or for the ratepayers. And he had said it was a philosophical question. They had asked this many times, and they wanted clarification. So this evening, council will be providing clarification as to that we operate our utilities for the benefit of our customers.
Councilmember Blair.
I think the only point that I would make is that in addition to what Councilmember Lester said, that in working this through last time, the point of that statement is the further statement in the resolution that the funds from these utilities shall not be expended for general governmental services. And that was achieved after much conversation and is slightly different than the clarification you referred to. It doesn't take away from my support for it.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Councilmember Ward, if you could repeat.
Yes, I'll repeat the motion. I move that the City Council approve resolution number 2013-13 pertaining to the management of the city's utilities.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion carries 5-2. Thank you. All right. Moving on to new business. Revisions to the traffic study requirements by Planning and Public Works. We have a duo tonight.
Yeah. I'm Kathy Cook from the Planning Department. As you know, the work plan for the Planning Department for 2013 included a review and revisions to the city's requirements for traffic studies. Due to some significant staffing changes, we haven't gotten started on that as early as we'd like, but we do know that it's a council priority, and so we want to move forward as expeditiously as possible. We feel strongly that the way to do that and get it done quickly is to make it a joint project between the Planning Department and Public Works, and I'm extremely grateful that John has agreed to that. We also think that we need to use consultant services. So in developing a scope from the consultant for a consultant, we're seeking your input. We know that you have concerns about the current traffic studies recent traffic studies that have been conducted. And so we just want to try to get some feedback from you about what you think the problem areas are, and that will help us craft the scope of work. So what I'm going to do is just give a very brief overview of the current practice. And then John is here to share his experience with what maybe other cities have done or react to some of your concerns. So the first thing is that it's the city who selects the independent traffic consultant to analyze the impacts of a specific development and then establishes the requirements, terms, and conditions for the study. So the city does go out and select the consultant, and then the applicant pays for the study. The triggers for requiring traffic studies are subdivisions, site plan reviews, so that's commercial, mixed-use, and multifamily developments, and any land use permit that would increase the demand on transportation facilities by more than 50 or more trips per day. And just as a point of reference, trips per day are calculated on one leg. So when you leave your house to go to the grocery store, that's one trip. When you come back, that's a second trip. So 50 trips per day is the equivalent of 25 round trips. The number of trips generated by a particular type of land use development is calculated using the Institute of Transportation Engineers Trip Generation Manual. So if you want to know how many trips a new supermarket of 44,000 square feet might generate, you turn to the manual. The methodology that is then used in the traffic study is taken from the Transportation Research Board's Highway Capacity Manual. It's a standard methodology used throughout the region and maybe the country, I don't know. And so what you do is you measure the traffic delays at intersections using existing conditions and then model how that will change with the additional trip generation, looking forward 7 to 10 years and considering other projects that are either underway or that the city knows are likely to be built, including any new intersections that are proposed. It's the city who determines which intersections to study. The traffic counts, and I think this may be of particular interest to the council, are performed on one day, typically a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, over a 3 to 4 hour period at the PM peak hour. And then the traffic engineer looks at the worst 2 hours in that period, and then the worst hour in that period, and then the worst 15 minutes within the worst hour, and then analyzes how those delays will impact a level of service at a given intersection. The reason that the PM peak hour is used is that the 2004 Island-Wide Transportation Study found that the PM peak traffic is the worst in the morning when people leave their homes to go to work or school or whatever. It's more spread out, but in the evening, people tend to kind of travel at the same time. And then one other thing I thought would be of interest to you is that the current practice is to assume reductions in trip generation in the downtown within 1 hour of the ferry, within 1 mile of the ferry terminal. And that deduction is based on guidance in the IT manual. It assumes that more people are going to be walking to the ferry or walking to work, and also because we have reduced parking requirements in the downtown, we often have projects where there's only one parking space per residence, resulting in fewer cars. And again, that's based on guidance from the ITE manual. So that's my brief summary, and now we're really interested to hear where your concerns are to help us kind of narrow down what we need to change. And
thank you.
John's here too.
Councilmember Hytopoulos.
So I feel, I mean, I have a couple of responses, my layperson response, but I think overall I feel like this is a situation where the council needs to be able to say, look, the end result isn't working. It's not passing the straight face test with most of us lay people, if not all of us, or the lay people in the community when we see results. And so we need you to tell us why. Now, what I'm hearing is, as a layperson, one random day doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's like perking a piece of property in August and not caring whether it works in, you know. I mean, there are things that happen when you go that route. So tourism, do we adjust for the fact that we're a community that has wild fluctuations with tourists? It sounds to me like I'd wonder whether we should necessarily be taking advantage of those reductions based on other planning issues like parking spaces. Maybe that's artificially depressing it. And I guess the definition of peak traffic hours, are they associated truly with a ferry commuting situation and our particular heavy boats? Because it seems like we've heard hours that weren't consistent with that. So those are some of my immediate layperson responses, but my overarching, as I said, is we need to be able to tell you here's something that's not working for the community. If there's a legal way that stays within appropriate engineering methodology or whatever, that we can legally do it differently, we'd like to know about what that is and what it would look like.
Okay. And if I could I, I'd like to follow up with a question. When you say, from the layperson's standpoint, it's not working, does that mean that you think there should be more improvements required than are being required? Is that kind of what not working might mean to
well,
some of you?
That may be one thing that could take care of it. The question is whether the amount of pressure being put on intersections in certain cases can be adjusted through improvements. I don't know. That's a question I need answered. I think we all have seen a need for more improvements as one element.
Okay.
Councilmember Ward.
Yeah, John, you and I had an opportunity to discuss the Cave Avenue study earlier this week, and I was involved in that for a couple of years as part of our neighborhood council, so I'm intimately acquainted with it. And our observations and conclusions were that at least in that case, and I suspect in other cases that the same methodology is followed, that the focus needs to be broadened a little bit, or maybe more than a little bit, to include adjacent streets and intersections that are impacted, to clearly show that there's an impact on a intersection that's 30 yards away, and say, well, we can't consider that because it's the methodology says we only look at this one leg. Well, the problem with that is you may end up approving a traffic study for a new development and the intersection fails. Well, because the traffic study was approved, the city still owns that intersection and has to deal with that failure. And that's a concern. I think the range of sampling times needs to be broader so that it accommodates the surges and lulls that we experience because of the ferry traffic, particularly in the Winslow area. I think that's, you know, there may be other communities that have similar things, but I think it's largely unique to us. You know, we have this large object that shows up and disgorges a couple hundred cars in a very short period of time onto one road. So that's, you know, those are things that are of a concern to me that, you know, if we can look around and see what other communities' best practices are, I think it would be helpful.
Okay.
I'd like to make a comment. I think one of the things that when I've listened to residents on Cave Avenue on the Grow development and starting to hear discussion on the Visconti up on High School Road, the thing that to me is appears an underlying concern is the intersections that are defined in the study. And when I think about, we have two really good examples of what happens to the traffic. When we've been doing Madison out here, there's a big sign that says, find an alternate route. There are lots of alternate routes. And so when we do a traffic study and we don't look at what happens when the traffic on that road gets bad and now alternate routes are now engaged that aren't evaluated as part of that, to me, I think that's the piece that is missing when we are doing those studies. We have basically a lot of small one-lane roads, and you know, we've defined them as connectors and arterials.
Arterials.
But when the road, when an arterial becomes overly crowded, a connector now becomes an arterial. I mean, look at the Hildebrand becomes a road when Madison was being torn up. People go and they come the back way through that, or they go over to Grow Avenue. So, I mean, that what I'm hearing from the different elements of the community is the traffic studies are focused too narrowly on a particular intersection, and I think it needs to be expanded in terms of how it really impacts a larger piece of the community.
Okay.
Councilmember Blossom.
So, Kathy, can you explain again the reduction if it's in within a mile of the ferry?
Yeah, so remember I talked about
the microphone? Thank you.
I talked about how the number of trips generated are calculated for a particular time, type of development. So, for example, a single-family residential subdivision, the number of trips generated per residence is 10 trips a day per residence. So if that subdivision were located within 1 mile of the ferry, then they could be eligible for a 25% reduction in that calculation, meaning that the assumption would be that the residence generates 7.5 trips a day rather than 10 trips a day.
Does that apply to commercial?
I believe it does.
See, I think that's a problem because, I can see where it makes sense for residential, but not for commercial because you have people from all over the island driving to it.
And I'm not certain, I'll put it in my notes to look at.
Councilmember Blair.
Well, I appreciate other council members articulating the problems, and I mostly want to say ditto. And I think the overarching point to me is they're not working. I mean, we have problems, and we can't just say, well, we did a traffic study. I'm sorry you're stuck. Or I'm sorry, this intersection isn't working. I think the point is it's not working. And I'm particularly glad that Steve mentioned and articulated for me what the problem is, and that is we may study one particular intersection that links directly to, and I'm thinking in this particular case of the Cave Avenue one, but there are all these other intersections that are so impacted because, again, as was pointed out, we have so many small roads that can't carry easily the extra load that happens when there's a backlog or that intersection fails. At that point, the options become very limited and we're stuck. And I think we also do a lot of damage to the road that wasn't constructed to carry that load.
Any more comment? Councilmember Lester.
Ask that we relook at the 25% reduction. Many of us do live downtown, and we're not going to Seattle that often. I mean, I move my business over here, and the ferry is not in my equation. The other thing I wanted to ask, this wasn't exactly on our strategic vision goals. I think it's super important, and I'm glad we're addressing it. I would ask that, I didn't have a chance to, I didn't think about this earlier, but at our retreat, during our discussion, previous discussions, we've talked about the traffic impact fee. Mm-hmm. And this, the same sort of person that would assist you, same sort of consultant that would assist you with that particular piece would also be a person that would be have expertise in this as well, because all of the traffic impact fee is based on traffic generation, the formulas. So I would suggest that possibly if you could look at the materials that were provided from Polsbo, and I can resend them, maybe we might have a twofer. Get two things done with this one potential consultant. So if you wouldn't mind bringing back option A is just the traffic study, option B would include both. Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments? Any questions for council?
Oh, I've got another one.
Councilmember Lester.
I believe you received some comments from the Non-Motorized Transportation Committee chair. They would certainly be a good source to get feedback regarding traffic studies. So I can send you the contact information if you wish.
Okay. If I could take just a couple minutes, I think what I'd like to do, based on what we've heard here tonight, is just kind of run through what the city does now and give you an idea of that there are, I think, a number of things that the city can do to make this better. Mm-hmm. I think there's a number of areas where there's options to make this better. The first one that comes to mind as we go through this is the traffic studies aren't required until you hit a 50 trip generation. Many cities use 10. And so
really?
That obviously brings a whole lot more developments into the fold of having to do a traffic study.
Does that mean with 10, does that mean that anything other than a city family residence, that could be what I heard, that 10 was a city family?
Short plats and everything,
Okay.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thank you.
You know, cities that experience a lot of traffic issues, that's one of the ways that they get at it. Certainly they get at it by a broader study that looks at more than just the adjacent intersection, which, you know, obviously in some places of Bainbridge Island, that's a necessity to do. So that's definitely something that we can look at doing. In terms of when the counts are done, generally, and particularly with Bainbridge Island, where you have a traffic study done, kind of an island-wide traffic study done, you can take the counts virtually any time of the year, and there will be factors that you can use to project that traffic to when it would be the peak traffic during the year. So if you take your traffic count in, I don't know, the middle of January as an example, when maybe that's not really when your peak hour is, maybe your peak hour is in August, you know, when the ferry comes in and tourism is the highest. There are factors that you could require that to be used to increase that January traffic count to the actual peak hour count. And so that's another thing that can be done.
John, could I give you a vivid example of that? On Cave Avenue, there's a nursery school and a daycare that are closed during certain periods of the year. You know, we have, and that's many, those both are patronized by what we jokingly refer to as the NASCAR moms. And, you know, if you do a traffic study when both those are closed, you're going to get dramatically different
Absolutely.
Results. So I think if there's a way to factor in site-specific considerations, I think it's important.
Right, yeah, correct.
Thank you.
And then, of course, the 25% reduction is certainly something that, you know, that you can look at. You don't have to use that. There's no regulation other than one you put in place that would, you know, that requires you to allow that reduction. So that's another area of looking at it. The other thing that you can do when you're doing your capacity analysis is, and this came to mind when the mayor mentioned a lot of more rural roads. If you've got narrower roads, then generally, from a theoretical standpoint, they'll have a lower capacity than a wider road that has 12-foot mm-hmm. lanes on it as opposed to 10-foot lanes. Mm-hmm. And so that's another factor that you can take into account and make sure that the traffic analysis takes into account, you know, those kind of reduced capacity items. And then I think the last thing gets to what Councilmember Lester mentioned. It may be that for the city of Bainbridge Island, the best thing that you can do is implement traffic impact fees. Because what happens when you don't have those, and all what you're requiring is developments to have traffic studies, you'll go along for quite a while. Say your level of service for an intersection failing is level of service E. Well, if you're at level of service D now, you can have a number of developments that come in and slowly, slowly degrade that intersection down to level of service E when it finally fails. And all of those developments come in basically scot-free. They don't mm-hmm. have to do anything based on the State Environmental Policy Act. When you go to an impact fee, every one of those incremental changes in that level of service has to pay their fair share of that change. So that may be a better way for the city of Bainbridge Island to approach this rather than going with the traffic study, which ultimately puts all of the cost of that improvement. Once that last development comes in, it flips over to level of service E and fails, then that's the development that has to do the improvement. Mm-hmm. And all of the rest of them came in without having mm-hmm. to do anything. So that may be a better way for us to go in the long run. So.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That was really helpful. Thank you.
Helpful to us as well. Is the traffic, just curious, is the traffic study on Visconti done or is it in process?
It is done.
Councilmember Blossom.
Well, no. I just want to make sure I understand. So you, with what John was just talking about, having the fees for the incremental impact, do you still determine what that is through a traffic study?
Essentially, the way you do it is through the ITE manual that was mentioned previously. That says, as an example, for a single family home, the trip generation is 10, which generally equates to 1 p.m. peak hour trip. And you can do your impact fees a number of different ways. You could do it based on the total trips that are generated in a given day. So your fee would then be whatever it is multiplied by 10, and they would just pay that. Mm-hmm. Or you could do it based on a PM peak and just multiply the number of PM peak trips by whatever the fee is, and they would just pay that into the city's transportation impact fee fund, and that would be the city that would have to, in their capital improvement program, would have to put projects in to fix those deficiencies.
But the fees themselves are established as a package and then applied to subsequent developments. You don't do a separate traffic
Correct.
Study
right.
for every
right.
every project yeah. to figure yeah. out what the fee is.
So mm-hmm. I want to make sure I followed correctly. John is saying is that an alternative to doing traffic studies is to do impact fee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we decide to do impact fees, there's no point in hiring a consultant to revise our traffic
Correct.
Study requirements.
Correct.
Okay, I just want to make sure that...
My understanding, and I could be wrong, and we can confirm this with our city manager, is that the traffic fees could be a longer process, and that improving the traffic studies might be an interim step until we can establish the traffic fees. Because you're right, once you have those traffic impact fees, you don't need to do a traffic study for every project.
Essentially, the city does the traffic study as part of their establishment of the impact fee amount.
Which is...
Councilmember Blair.
Okay. Well, I thought I got it, and now I'm confused again. So I want to clarify. I mean, I thought that I heard Debbie suggest that in doing it, that the two things, if it made sense, to do the two things simultaneously. Because in order to do the traffic studies, which was essentially where this whole thing started, was to look at that and see how we're doing them and have a consultant help us with that. So that's sort of one thing. If that's the interim step, why don't we do the two together so that we're prepared and using this information to
right.
lead to what will be step two?
Right. No, that's how I understood it as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right.
Councilmember Lester.
Sorry. I think possibly an interim of like immediate would be to bring us back the four recommendations you just had. I thought they were brilliant. And we could immediately implement those as we're waiting for whatever in terms of your talking with the city manager and whatever you decide to bring back to us you think is the right pathway, doing it simultaneously or just going for the traffic impact fee. We'll leave it to your good guidance.
Thinking about, again, this is an off-the-cuff kind of a thought, when you look at the impact fees as well as a traffic study and asking the developer to do some kind of a modification or pay for a modification of the street, looking at a project like Visconti up on High School Road, all right, if there were impact fees, we would establish those impact fees and it would be applicable everywhere. That intersection, when it fails, is going to cost so much money. And so the contribution each developer has to getting to the point where that intersection fails, you could say, it's going to take, when it gets up to 2,000 cars, it's going to fail, and so this project is going to be a $2 million project to clean up the intersection. Therefore, the impact fees for each of those car trips is so much for that intersection. Every intersection is going to be different. So it seems to me you probably need a bit of both, because if you're just doing the impact fees, then what I'm hearing is at that point in time, then it's the city with the accumulation of those impact fees then decides at some point in time that intersection is starting to fail, so we're going to go and repair it. Did I get that right?
Somewhat.
Okay.
When you do your impact fee, there's a number of different ways that it can be done. You can decide if you'd like to have more than one impact fee zone in the city. And so you could then say, okay, in this zone, the improvements in this zone are going to be paid for through an impact fee on only new development in this zone, so they're all going to pay for those improvements. Or most cities, because that gets very, very cumbersome, most cities elect to do a single zone for the whole city.
Mm-hmm.
So even in that case, even developments that don't send a single trip through the intersection you mentioned would pay their impact fee, and their impact fee would be the same for a single family residence, as an example, anywhere on the island or anywhere in the Winslow area, if that's the zone you want to use. And then the city uses that money as it comes in to do improvements anywhere in that zone. So the city prioritizes those and goes after the one that's going to fail first, as an example. So
okay.
did that
mm-hmm.
that help?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So it can get very complicated. The other thing that's really nice about impact fees, and I think this would be really helpful in on the city of Bainbridge Island, is you don't have to do it just for an intersection failure. You can do it, establish mm-hmm. failure levels for your roadway sections, and you can even use non-motorized facilities
mm-hmm.
as a part of that calculation. And I've been involved in that in my past life, where we did exactly that, and new development's impact fee was based on not only the transportation improvements, but also partially on the non-motorized, because, again, the tie in there is if you've got a 10-foot wide lane and a 1-foot wide shoulder, you've got a certain capacity that roadway theoretically will handle. If you go to a 2-foot wide shoulder, it'll handle a little more. A 3-foot, it'll handle a little more theoretically, and that's the way you tie non-motorized facilities to the transportation capacity and get essentially traffic impact fees to help pay for part of your non-motorized infrastructure. So that might, here on the island, that might work really, really well.
Okay. Councilmember Blaster.
Thank you so much for mentioning the non-motorized aspects. Currently, do we include those in our traffic studies? And in, if not, during this interim, could we calculate that?
That's a really good question, and I guess I've never experienced where that's been a part of that traffic study, but I don't think there's anything that would preclude the city from doing something like that. We might have to think about how we do it and, you know, make the nexus and the tie-in and all of that, but yeah, I think it's definitely worth considering, absolutely.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Great presentation, great discussion.
Did you have anything else? There's one other.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can I get clarification on how we're going forward? Are we hiring a consultant to do the changes?
So
I'm confused.
I think what we heard is you'd like us to try to put something together that is an interim improvement to the current requirement for doing a traffic study that maybe makes the traffic study results better in terms of quantifying the impacts on the transportation network and maybe the non-motorized network if we can figure out how to do that. And then also look forward at what step two might be, whether it's a more robust traffic study or beginning to look at traffic impact fees if that makes the most sense to go. So that's kind of the phase one, phase two that I heard. So if I missed something there, please let us know.
Councilmember Hytopoulos.
I'd want to know what the legal implications were for kind of doing something and then kind of doing something else, because, I mean, you've got development interests here and, you know, vesting and, you know, the whole scheme. So I would definitely just want to hear from the city attorney whether we could piecemeal changes that we might then change our mind about in the next stage, which is the permanent stage. So it just kind of raises a little red flag for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So. That's an excellent suggestion. Absolutely. Yeah.
Council Member Lester.
Oh, I'm not going to speak for legal counsel. I know some of this, but I'm not going to speak for them. I'll let them speak.
Okay, thank you.
Great. If there was a way to kind of quickly put together a memo to council so that we, put this together, as well as kind of a time frame of when, you know, the different steps would be, I think would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Item B, proclamation declaring Saturday, August 24th, 2013, Islander Memorial Park Day.
No, the first one, you got it. Thank you. And I think, Roz, there's a button down below to click it to start. There you go, in the middle. Thanks so much. So, Council, I'm bringing before an item to consider approving a proclamation honoring the Island Mobile Home Parks refinancing of the original 2004 loans that were due for full repayment by October 2014 to a fully amortizing 35-year loan at a fixed rate of 3.05%, and by doing so, securing long-term financial stability for its residents and the historic neighborhood. For over 40 years, the Islander Mobile Home Park has provided affordable housing and continues to contribute to the diversity of the island, its most precious resource. The City of Bainbridge Island's guiding documents, the housing element of the Comprehensive Plan and the Winslow Master Plan, both recognize the importance of preserving the historic and desired use of the Islander Mobile Home Park in the heart of downtown Winslow on Bainbridge Island, Washington. In 2004, the City of Bainbridge Island, by purchasing 7 shares in the Islander Residents Association, participated with the residents of the Islander Mobile Home Park in their quest to buy the land. The city contracted with Housing Resource Board to manage the city's shares for the purpose of preserving the historic use of the park as affordable housing and was granted the exceptional right to sublet its lots to income-qualified individuals. The Islander Residents Association Board, led by President Barbara Chrisman and Vice President Maria Cook, who are both here, glad to see you, took on the challenging task of getting refinancing before the looming October 2014 due date. This was no small feat, with a feasibility assessment, appraisal, third-party reports, hundreds of pages of government and mortgage documents, last-minute payments to be wired, wrangling of 50 residents to sign and return paperwork, and responding, sometimes in very, very short time frames. Congratulations to the Islander Mobile Home Park residents and its board for successfully finishing this nearly two-year process at a time when interest rates were at a historic low, over a year before all the loans were due to come, and preserving this great island neighborhood. Congratulations. Is there a motion?
Councilmember Blair.
Thank you. I move the City Council approve Mayor Stephen Bonkowski signing the proclamation declaring this Saturday, August 24th, 2013, Islander Mobile Home Park Day.
Second.
Discussion. Councilmember Blair.
Well, mostly I just want to cheer.
Yes.
For your business. We can do that. And you're doing it.
Now we can vote.
Okie doke.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously. Congratulations.
Do you wish to comment or? There's a microphone and podium, and if you could say your name and where do you live?
My name is Maria Cook, and I live in the Islander Mobile Home Park. And as Vice President of the Board, as we worked to secure this financing, we really felt we were participating for the greater island, for the whole community. And I'm so grateful that you all are acknowledging that fact that we are indeed an asset. And we're very proud of our neighborhood and very grateful to be able to continue. And we've enjoyed the partnership of the city since our ownership. It's been very beneficial. And thank you so much for acknowledging our achievement and for recognizing our community. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And do you want Steve to sign and we can send them away with one? Okay. I'll be right back.
So it's done.
It's done. In anticipation that it was going to be approved.
We have the proclamation for you and we'll be joining you in celebration. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the third item on the agenda was added by Councilmember Hytopoulos.
Yes, and I will try to be brief, although I'm not super organized. I am passing down to you guys copies of a draft letter. It doesn't have to look just like that, and a fact sheet from Coal Free PSA, but regarding the issues that are behind the letter. But like I said, I unfortunately have another copy here of the letter that came from King County and Snoqualmie, City of Redmond, City of Kirkland, City of Renton. What's happening here is this is the comment period on the 20-year plan for PSC that's being presented to the Utility Transportation Commission to decide, you know, whether or not this is in the interest of the ratepayers, their plan. And the plan involves a large amount of coal. Mm-hmm. And so the letter that I've passed down to you and the letter as well that, you know, there are other letters, but the letter that I have here from other elected officials stresses the fact that, you know, the dangers of coal, of mining coal, of burning coal, all of those are clear. We know them. We know we're supposed to be moving away from coal. And in this particular situation, the coal plant, the main coal plant that they are relying on is in serious need of upgrades that will cost money. There are all sorts of unknown liabilities. You know, more and more liabilities are discovered as the law changes and makes coal burners even more liable. So the request is basically that that the UTC take a good look at this, their proposed mixture that of energy sources that emphasizes coal, and really considers the true costs behind those using coal, because they are not reflected, and that in fact the cost of investing in enlarging renewable resources not only may be the same but less in the future. So I'm offering to sign it because, as I heard, I wasn't here the last time something came forward, a request to sign something on this issue, and because I had raised the coal issue before, I'm more than happy to own it in my name and sign it, but I'd want permission to use, as one coming to you, to use my name as a council person. If you're willing to let me do it today, we'll get it in during the comment period. If you need to think about it, I think I could submit it, but it would be after the comment period.
So. Discussion? Councilmember Lester.
I am completely in support of this, and I thank Councilmember Hytopoulos for following and tracking this and keeping us up to date on when the comment period is closing. We did send a letter before. Should we maybe pull that letter out and in addition to yours, also have the City Council's resolution letter provided?
Okay, so did we do a letter directly on this before?
Yeah.
For the comment period?
I don't think so.
Oh, so are you saying, should we pull our previous
and
comment,
put it,
the one, was this the one that Steve wound up signing? And you mean add it as the full council through the mayor having...
Was that, I don't think that was associated with PSC. That was on the coal trains.
Yeah, because we've done the coal trains resolution, and then there was what Steve participated as in the article in the paper. Do you remember that... was with them, but that was coal trains.
I believe that's all coal trains.
I think it was coal trains too.
And
well, we've taken a position on the coal trains.
And I would certainly, I think it's certainly be appropriate to attach that as a backup to your comment that the island is supportive.
Yeah, because
I could from my standpoint, I could certainly support you. Using your council position to do that with the language that you've selected.
Yeah.
So
I could throw another paragraph in referencing why there's attached basically a previous resolution on the particular issue of using that. This is a little different, just to be clear, because that had to do with shipping mass amounts out to Asia, and this has to do with us burning here. So, but
it does speak to the consistency of
of our community being sure.
I think there's an affirmation. I don't think we need a motion.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to thank you for bringing it forward, Kirsten. Consent agenda.
Mr. Chairman.
Councilmember Ward.
I move we approve the consent agenda. Item A, accounts payable voucher and payroll approval. Item B, special meeting retreat minutes, June 30th, 2013. Special regular study session meeting minutes, July 17th, 2013. Ordinance number 2013-24, Q2 2013, budget adjustments, AB 13-024. Rockaway Beach Road Stabilization Project Phase 2 Construction Support Local Agency Standard Consultant Supplement Agreement Number 3, AB 11-061, amended interlocal agreement with the City of Bremerton for traffic signal repair and maintenance, AB 13-057.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Committee reports. Any committees to be reported upon?
Well, the Road Ends Committee met and are moving forward with the work plan. As often happens, the processes are frustrating and the committee is ready to go. So they're eager and working with city staff to make sure that we go through the processes and any modifications that are made to any of the road ends are done following city and municipal health and safety regulations.
Okay. Any other committees? Okay. Moving on to the council meeting agendas. Starting with next week.
There's Councilmember Hightopoulos.
Excuse me. Councilmember Hightopoulos.
Okay, so I have a feedback and then a question. So feedback is, I'm listed, and I've already talked to Roz about this, but I'm listed as the leader on this conversation about clarify lease agreement with Bainbridge Island Farmers Market. So I've raised the issue. I want to hear from the city manager about the lease, mm-hmm. But it's very open-ended. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't have a presentation. I don't have a plan. I mean, I have an opinion, which I've already expressed, about wanting it to be fairly liberal but not bumping mm-hmm. up against what we've seen. So I just want to make it clear that I am expecting to have a conversation with staff. So if staff doesn't have anything to share with us about the lease, I won't have much to say except to repeat, okay, I'm hoping that the lease remains liberal enough to allow, you know, political activities and so forth.
But do we want to move this into staff intensive, have a presentation by the...
sure, yes.
I think doing it that way, mm-hmm. then we have, this is what the lease says, and we okay. can then have a discussion based on that.
Great. That's fine. And then my question, this is for Debbie. I wanted to know more about the request for proposal for newspaper inserts, because is that related to part of Doug's communications plan? And if so, are you and Doug working together on this, or what's his involvement in that?
I'm in the process of putting together a concept, and I will certainly, that's definitely a concept for the community insert for newspapers.
So I guess, and we can talk about it then, but my concern is I thought we had discussed this before with him, and that it was still in his court to come up with a communications plan. And in so doing, we haven't had a chance yet to hear what his proposal is for the whole, you know, the entirety of that, and it's all mm-hmm. part of the same. But maybe I'm missing something. I thought we were waiting for him to give us his entire scheme.
Well, I could certainly check with him on that, and it can be pulled or post.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So we'll go ahead with that one. The next item, you'll notice that, as Roz mentioned, you can't tell. It's very difficult to read the dates, but the next business meeting is the 28th. One of the items that we were looking for is to try to come to having a public comment or an open house or something with respect to the Vincent. What's the process that we need to do? Is that just an open discussion on a study session? Would that be the way to do that, or what's the sense of how we should proceed on that?
Right.
Because I don't see it being shown anywhere.
Right. So I thought we'd agreed on a standalone, relatively brief, simple open house here in City Hall, and it's in staff's court to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What minute?
I'd like to make a recommendation, since that business meeting is only 65 minutes, then is it possible that we could do a 1 hour before that?
Mm-hmm. From 7 to 8?
From 7 to 8 and start the business meeting at 8. Can we do that? Yes.
So my response would be, I mean, I fully intended it for not to be a city council event, that this was for the public, so I don't know why we would put it in there. Also, I think that we should be pretty religious about our adherence to the 7 o'clock start date, because that's tradition, that's what people expect to speak, et cetera. So for two reasons, I wouldn't put it there. Maybe if you feel we can adjourn at 8, it could be at 8, but that seems kind of late. So I would do it on a different day.
Okay. Councilmember Blair.
And with regard to that
let's check in with the city manager and find out, because it was, according to the minutes, I missed that meeting. It was to be done in collaboration with the park department.
No.
And, I mean, that they wanted, they're
no.
not?
No.
Okay,
no.
I misread that.
Clarification on that.
Okay, then I misread that. Thank you for clarifying. Okay, never mind.
No, because that was the issue, is that it was because it's city-owned property.
Correct.
That the city needed to have some sense of how the property needs to be used.
Thank you.
Because that was what was written sense. In the agreement that we had when we got the donation of the property. I guess what I'm getting at is you need to take to Doug that. I'm continuing to get emails and calls. When are we going to have this all done?
Yep, I heard that.
Okay.
Take that along.
Thank you.
Councilmember Hartopoulos.
So I'm assuming I'm just giving some feedback for you to take to Doug in case I forget in the next two meetings. One is I see the comprehensive plan amendment ordinances public hearings coming up on the 13th of November, and that's one of the only meetings I know I'll miss the rest of the year. And so if that's the actual vote, I would want to move that if possible.
Okay, I'm sorry, Kirsten, you're...
We went way ahead to November 13th because I happen to know I'm not going to be here. So
okay.
I just want to give feedback that if that is not set in stone for some reason, that I want to give, because a lot of people count on that. I mean, there's a lot of process that leads up to it, I think, with a bunch of amendments, and so people will be counting on dates, and so I want to give a lot of lead time here saying please don't do it on the 13th of November. And then another one is I'm not seeing... my issue coming back regarding cooperative compliance. Maybe I'm missing it.
Proper compliance.
So code enforcement. We were trying to have an ongoing conversation about learning about what the city is doing with regards to allowing after the fact permitting, and you know whether or not we're fining people for code violations. And we were starting that conversation. I don't see it anywhere, but I may be missing it.
All right, and that needs to be a study session, I think.
Yep.
So maybe we could do it on the 4th.
Yeah. Why don't we tentatively add that to the 4th then?
The city doesn't currently have a code compliance officer, so
right.
Well, then
but Kathy might be able to come and talk to you about kind of where we're heading with that.
So she's probably familiar with what our policy, because I think it's been our policy one time. If she could explain the philosophy of code enforcement at Bainbridge Island, that would be helpful.
I'll check and see if she's available.
And I think it's also important, if without a code enforcement officer, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And that's the other piece. I mean, this is the way we do code enforcement, and then without a code enforcement officer, are we just not doing anything, or other people assume it?
No, you had an acting, at least at one point, Josh was the acting code enforcement.
Again, that's...
It would be good for the public to know.
Right.
Sure.
Council Member Blair and then Lester.
Well, I have to go back to looking at the business meeting and the social media policies. At a business meeting, have we had a study session? Was that something that we've gone over or had presented or anything? I have a feeling that's going to be one of those things that would be helpful to get some background and understand. I don't know, because I don't know what the policies are. And since they're new ones, they're scheduled currently for July 28th. And normally when they're at a business meeting...
August 28th, you want to move it to the study session next week?
If it fits.
I believe what we were trying to do is to put that in as soon as we could, and that was the first time that the city manager and the attorney were going to be here.
That's when they're both...
And that's the reason it was in there.
Okay.
Because you're right, it's more of a study session item, but we really wanted to get... some focus on it.
Okay. And that makes perfect sense, but I wouldn't like to have... I guess I'm going to tell you forewarning, I'm not interested in voting on policy without having some conversation and having seen them. So I'd like to be sure it's about background.
My sense is that is not... that's a discussion. It's not
great.
A policy.
That's correct.
Okay. And... that in particular, we probably need to make sure that there is material available, not just presented at the...
Sure.
Okay. All right. And you got the note, Kirsten's note on the business meeting on November 13th? Okay. Pulling it up sooner is always better than pushing it out later. Other comments or... Councilmember Blair.
And on September 4th, the joint meeting with the Ethics Board and the City Council, is that an agenda that's being worked out in collaboration with the Ethics Board, or is there a predetermined focus for that conversation? Do you know?
I believe there was a request to have a joint meeting at the last discussion, and I know that we have been working with the Ethics Board to set that time up and to confirm their ability to attend.
I'm assuming that, and I don't want to assume, so the mayor and Doug are working on that and pulling it together. Okay, thank you.
Okay. If you could tell him he needs to set up a meeting with us.
Yes.
Any other comments? Okay, are we into... So the next item, good of the order? Sounds like it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good of the order. Councilmember Lester.
How did you know? right now, Helpline House and Paper Products are doing a project backpack, and this is the 13th annual school supplies drive. Supplies, backpacks, and monetary donations may be brought to Helpline House or Paper Products. For more information, you can go to helplinehouse.org. On the 16th of August, Jarek Bischoff and friends at BPA. Jarek had the great honor of performing with David Burns, the Kronos Quartet, and he's coming back from a world tour, and we're very excited to have him here at BPA. The tickets are $20 per person, and you can check with the BPA website. Movies in the Park at Waterfront Park. In August, Free Friday Night Movies, sponsored by the Metropolitan Park and Rec District, are a chance to enjoy evening with neighbors, friends, and family. TJ Fattis will once again serve as MC and keep the crowds entertained. The movie coming up this Friday is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And upcoming, we have Bike for Pi, Sunday, August 18th until 3 p.m. Join family, friends, and neighbors and celebrate the great biking on Bainbridge Island while enjoying some of the most delicious pie around. Routes include two options to suit all riders and include either one or two pie stops. Event is a fundraiser for Squeaky Wheels and Friends of the Farm, and see the website squeakywheels.org, I believe is the website, for more information. Thank you.
Councilmember Blair.
Thank you. There is a meeting tomorrow evening here at City Hall between 6 and 8, being sponsored by the League of Women Voters, and it's an information and discussion session to talk about and learn more about the 0.1% sales tax increase proposal. And that tax increase was something that our council considered and wrote a letter of support for that. It is to increase the resources available for mental health services.
The and what's the other one? Hold on a second. It is, and I think I had mentioned last week the Google eCities award. And it just came out on the chamber website. And there are basically every state has identified a single city that is doing a lot of business and focusing their business on basically internet and e-commerce. And Bainbridge was selected as the city in Washington that is doing the best job and has the most e-business probably per capita in the state, and so we're excited to be selected. And this is a new award that Google has started. This is the first year of the award. They have done this in the past in Europe, but in the United States, this is the first year of that award.
And I hope you're going to be receiving it on our behalf.
I will be receiving
what
it.
What day do you do it?
It is on. It is on the.
Oh, is it? It's coming by email. That's great.
No, because it's at Bon Bon's.
You know. Oh, so there's candy involved.
So I believe there's chocolate involved.
I think we better notify that one because there might be more than one council member showing up.
And it's on the 23rd.
Yeah.
So next Friday. I believe so. I was asked along the same lines. I was asked to attend in my capacity as mayor. Suquamish Partners Luncheon, and that is on Friday the 6th. I think it's important for us to continue that, and it ties into a lot of what's been going on in KRCC with respect to the region and the tribe. So, happy to report that. Other comments? Motion.
So moved to adjourn.
You're adjourned.
Oh, isn't that great?